This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
If you've been struggling with your weight, Mochi Health is here to help. Mochi Health is a long-term weight loss solution personalized to fit your unique needs and goals. Meet one-on-one with board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians who are on a mission to listen. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medications at an affordable set price and get them delivered to their home each month. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 at checkout for $40 off your first month of membership.
It's the amazing Rico Bronya podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
That's right. We are Rico Bronya. We have made it to the home stretch. The home stretch of this endless spring training that feels like it's been going on for a very long time. We are within a week of opening day. We are within striking distance of opening day. And we are starting to get more clarity on this final 26 for the New York Mets. We'll spend some time on that. The rotation is officially set. Some interesting comments made about Luis Angel Acuña. And then we'll go through some great and depressing opening day memories. The way I did it was I closed my eyes the other day and I said, all right, Evan, think of opening day. Think of Mets opening day memories. And then I opened up my eyes and wrote down the first bunch of things that came to mind. A couple of days ago on the Rico Bronya, I could not remember the difference between opening day 22 and opening day 21 and when the Tom Seaver statue came up. So that didn't fit when I closed my eyes because I've got foggy memories over the last couple of years. So some of these memories are from a while ago. Some of them are a little bit more recent. But we'll get into that a little bit later on the Rico. As far as decisions that have been made, let's start off with some clarity we now have on the final 26. Number one, we know the rotation. There had been rumors over the last couple of days of Tylor Megill making the rotation and Paul Blackburn going to the bullpen. That was confirmed by the manager, Carlos Mendoza, and we even know the order. Clay Holmes opening day, we already knew that. Tylor Megill will pitch game two Friday night in Houston against the Astros. Griffin Canning will pitch the finale of that series Saturday night in Houston against the Astros, or Saturday late afternoon, I'm trying to remember. Then they have an off day on Sunday, and then they play three games in Miami where we will see. We will see the final two guys in the rotation to kick it off, which is David Peterson, Kodai Senga, back to Clay Holmes, which means Tylor Megill is doing it again. He's pitching another opening day. He's getting another home opener. Remember, he had a true opening day a couple of years ago when DeGrom and Scherzer were hurt in Washington, D.C. back in 2022. So Tylor Megill has gotten that opening day not a bunch. And barring something crazy, barring injury, barring God knows what, I can't even say rainouts because there will be no rainouts for the first six games the Mets are playing, opening up in Houston and Miami. But we will see Tylor Megill open the season in the Met rotation. If you go back a month ago, if you go back to the beginning of spring training when we were trying to project the rotation, this would have been a surprise. And it would have been a surprise for a myriad of reasons. First of all, It took a couple of injuries. It took Sean Manaea not being ready to start the year in the rotation. Obviously, Frankie Montas, which was the first injury we saw. But the other thing that turned out to be a mild surprise was that the Mets didn't put the optionality of Tyler McGill, the fact that he could go to AAA, above who they think gives them the best chance to win. And I think a part of that is, I guess, the way they view Blackburn as a weapon out of the bullpen, because you're going to need guys who can give you a bunch of innings, especially early in the season. Like, I was thinking about it on Sunday. The Mets played their second-to-last spring training game of the year, and Griffin Canning was on the mound, and he was fine. He pitched into the fifth inning. He allowed two runs, had a bunch of strikeouts, but his pitch count started to get up there. And in the regular season, a guy like Griffin Canning, you'll see it when this season starts, how many pitches is Carlos Mendoza really going to allow him to throw? So the pitching line we saw on Sunday, 4 1/3 innings, 4 2/3 innings, 2-3 runs, is a very reasonable pitching line. Well, it's going to be tough to kind of mix and match all the different bullpen arms to get the multitude of outs that you're going to need. So having a guy like Paul Blackburn who can come in and piggyback him and throw 3 or 4 innings, there's a value to that. And clearly the Mets kind of valued McGill higher than Blackburn in that role, especially in the rotation, to then just move Blackburn to the bullpen. But again, going back a month ago, I would have looked at the fact that McGill could be sent down to AAA and stored, and I just would have figured, all right, he's going to go to AAA. Blackburn will be in the rotation, and they'll figure out the rest of that bullpen and who could throw multiple innings in a different way. So I would certainly admit it's a mild surprise, but good for Tyler McGill. I view this for McGill. This is really, and I think I said this last year, so, you know, I could be wrong again. This feels like his last shot. We've heard so much about his stuff and the velocity on his fastball and his spin rate and how much he's grown. He's got to go out there and not allow himself to lose a rotation spot. Because here's the beauty for Griffin Canning and Tyler McGill specifically. If you go out and you pitch well, you will not lose your spot in the rotation. The Mets will find a way for you to get the baseball every 5 or 6 days, whether it's other guys getting hurt, whether it's just figuring out moving someone else to the bullpen, maybe even guys we wouldn't expect right now. So this for Canning, and especially for McGill, this is your moment. This is your shot. Now, I'm looking at this as a Met fan. Okay, what gives them a chance to win once a week when McGill's on the mound? And I've said this before about him. If he can go out and pitch 5 1/3 innings and allow 2 or 3 runs with this offense, that should be good enough. Now, is that good enough for him to keep a rotation spot? Not necessarily. But I'm viewing this the way you guys are viewing this, just as Met fans. How can we win games? And if McGill could at least give you that 5 1/3 innings, get the baseball into the sixth inning, allow 2 or 3 runs, this should, keyword should, be an offense that will be able to make that kind of pitching line stand up. So big opportunity for Tyler McGill. He'll start game number 2 of this season and obviously come around and pitch the home opener. We found out that Dednell Nunez is going to start the year at AAA. No surprise. We've talked about this on the last few Ricos, that the fact that he can't pitch multiple innings, the fact that he can't pitch on back-to-back days, for the reasons I laid out earlier about first couple of times around the rotation, how deep in a game is Griffin Canning going to go, you're going to need to maximize what you get out of the bullpen. And Dednell Nunez, as nasty as he is he really that useful until he's built up enough where the Mets can lift those restrictions? Until they lift those restrictions, he's better off being in AAA, where you could have those restrictions all day and no one's going to care. David Stearns made this clear when he joined Gary Cohen and Daniel Murphy on the broadcast on Sunday, which is he's a major leaguer. It's just about kind of getting him ready for the start of the year. So, Hoff, it's a little bit of semantics, because I remember when we talked about this a few days ago in relation to him and AJ Minter, you said, well, can they really put him on the IL? Well, in the case of Dednell Nunez, they didn't have to put him on the IL. He's got options. He goes to AAA. In the case of AJ Minter, it looks like he's trending in the right direction of being ready. Obviously, if a guy like Minter's not ready, then you're going to have to play the game of putting him on the IL. But in the case of Nunez, no harm, no foul. He gets to go to AAA. They get to slowly build him up. And assuming there's no setbacks and no injuries, we'll see him sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I guess that's the best case scenario, because I hate hearing, oh, Nunez on the IL to start the season because it's just recovery. That makes me feel like something's wrong. I don't think anything's wrong right now. I think he's just not fully ready to go.
they're taking it easy on him. And look, he's got, it almost feels like the Mets are using Dednell Nunez like he's this weapon that only has a certain amount of bullets in it. Now, that's a terrible thing to say because he's young, he's in his 20s, and we hope he has this long career ahead of him. But considering the injury problems he had last year, how nervous they were that it was going to, he was going to need more of a serious surgical procedure, it feels like they're handling him with such care. And so for now, until they gain more confidence in him, it makes sense for him not to be up here. Plus, it opens up opportunities. Look, we already know Danny Young is going to be on this team. We know that. We know that A.J. Minter is at least trending in the direction of being on this team. We know Paul Blackburn's going to be a long man for now. I mean, there's some fluidity to this roster. So if there's a team desperate for a starting pitcher and they call about Paul Blackburn and the Mets could get, I don't know, a useful player back, even a prospect back, there's always the possibility he sent out. But right now it feels like that last bullpen spot is between Max Kranick and Waskar Brazoban. And I want Max Kranick up here. He's a multi-inning guy. Now, they both have options, so that part's kind of easy. Either guy can go to AAA, but Kranick has looked so good so far in spring training. I'm hoping it's him, and he deserves to be that guy. I mean, the Mets have gone big on the this guy deserves it card, right? Like, that's part of why Tyler McGill's in the rotation and Paul Blackburn isn't. Tyler McGill earned it. He's in the rotation. To me, Max Kranick has earned a bullpen spot.
Well, the good thing is that this time around, you have people that have options that you can mess around with and don't have to cut or waive or whatever. Last year, they kept Michael Tonkin on the team because if they cut him or if there was no options left, so the only other choice was to let him go. So at least I feel more confident that they have the right guys. It's just when will they bring them up?
Now, when it comes to position players, unfortunately, it's a little bit more of a tricky spot. Alexander Canario has hit. He had a hell of a Sunday. He had a couple of home runs. He has produced since the Mets acquired him during a live Rico. I'll never forget that when Hoff's like, we made a trade for Alexander Canario. And I'm like, what the hell does that mean? Well, at the time, it felt like it gave the Mets the option to trade Starling Marte. And they still have that option. I mean, if the right deal comes along in the next 72 hours, they can ship out Starling Marte and Alexander Canario can easily take that spot as the right-handed DH and, of course, his ability to play the outfield. Stearns was asked point blank about this when he was on the SNY broadcast. Like, what do you do with him? And his answer was, we'll see. He really didn't have an answer. So there's two options the Mets have. Option number one, which is still a possibility, it's still something I prefer them not do, but can very well happen, is trading Starling Marte. They can eat a portion of that contract. Maybe they get back a reliever. So what we were just talking about with Max Kranick and Waskar Brazoban becomes irrelevant. They both go down to AAA because the Mets just acquired a major league reliever for Starling Marte, much like the rumors suggested during the offseason. If they do that, Canario's on the team. Option number two is they lose him. And, you know, when Canario was designated for assignment by Chicago, there was certainly a sentiment at the time, not that I was paying attention to it, I'm not going to lie and say I was, of, wow, the Cubs gave up on a young, talented, still a guy who's got a lot of potential. And the Mets swooped in, made the deal for him, but a part of the problem was he never had any options left. That was the issue. So if the Mets can't find a spot for him, and right now, barring a trade of Starling Marte or a trade of Tyrone Taylor, which I really don't expect, but that would be the other guy I would at least throw out there. They're not trading Siri. They just got him. Obviously, they're not trading Brandon Nimmo as much as Hoff wants it. Juan Soto is pretty damn safe. Jesse Winker just got re-signed. So it's really Marte and I guess Tyrone Taylor, even though I don't think they'll trade him. They're going to expose him to waivers. And considering the way he's played in the spring, considering his age, there's no way he's going down to the minor leagues, which is part of why the Mets probably brought in Billy McKinney, because they know Canario is not going to go down to AAA. So it really comes down to just, hey, we gave it a try. We brought him in here. He had a good camp. Didn't work out. There's just no roster spot for him, and he'll end up somewhere else. And by the way, I'll tell you exactly where he should end up. And I know this is the Rico Bronya, but I'll say it on the fan the next couple of days. He should be a Yankee. I think that's an absolute no-brainer considering the injury problems they have, considering the Giancarlo Stanton problem, considering Canario can play the outfield. He goes on waivers. If I'm Brian Cashman, I'm hitting that waiver button. I know we have that in fantasy. I don't think they have that in the majors, but he makes a lot of sense for them. My point is, he's not going to the minor leagues with the Mets. I'd be very, very surprised. It'd be great, but I'd be very, very surprised. Could they trade Marte or Taylor? It's possible. It's possible.
Speaking of that, by the way, how do waivers work right now, considering that a game hasn't been played? There's no worse team.
Yeah, I think it's reverse order of the final standings of last year, and it goes National League first and then the American League. So a team like the Yankees would probably be in a really terrible position to claim Alexander Canario, because you're going the entire National League first and then a majority of the American League. So I bring it up because it's a good fit for them, but honestly, I think he'll be claimed by another National League team. Like, if you're the Miami Marlins, why the hell wouldn't you claim Alexander Canario at this point?
So you're saying there's a chance the Dodgers get him before the Yankees do?
Yes, that is very much on that's very much on the table. Certainly a possibility. The other outfield note was Brandon Nimmo played center field. So it's an option. I doubt we're going to see many games in which Nimmo starts in center field. Stearns even said it on the broadcast. It's probably more something you'll see in the middle of games. Do you pinch hit for a Tyrone Taylor or Jose Siri? Especially when you got a Brett Beatty on your bench, you got a left-handed bat on the bench, you could be dangerous. You have a Jesse Winker on your bench potentially if Marte started at DH. It allows the flexibility of Nimmo shifting to center, but I doubt we're going to see a lot of, you know, Winker in left, Nimmo in center, Soto in right. Now, let me get to this Acuna thing, because this is fascinating to me. And it's not crazy to think that Luis Angel Acuna's struggles at AAA last year were equated to being bored. I've heard that theory a lot about minor leaguers when guys struggle in the minors, get called up to the majors, and they're better than they ever were. I think I heard that about Matt Harvey many years ago, where guys who are just really talented get bored by the minor leagues. Sounds kind of crazy, but it's been out there before. And I forget who brought it up. It may have been Lugie on Evan and Tiki when we were talking about this, talking about Acuna and how he didn't perform well at AAA last year. He hasn't performed well in spring training. So we're really looking at 2 weeks more than we are anything else. And I think it may have been him or Tiki who said maybe he was bored in the minors last year, which I always accepted as a possibility. Here's what Francisco Lindor said about Luis Angel Acuna. It's one thing, in my opinion, to be bored in the minor leagues. Lindor says, quote, "I think he plays bored in spring training." Now, before I continue with this quote, spring training, you're battling for a roster spot. You're battling for an everyday job because Jeff McNeil is hurt. I get spring training bores me, and it bores most people listening or watching right now who may not consume spring training. But right off the top, the first part of that sentence pissed me off. Not about Lindor. I think Lindor is being honest. He's being a captain. He's telling us the deal. But you're telling me Luis Angel Acuna is bored by spring training? He's bored by a job audition? Because that's really what it is. We've all gone for job, you know, meetings or job interviews. Imagine going in there and just being bored. Well, then you're not that serious about the job. Anyhow, here's the full quote from Lindor. "I think he plays bored in spring training. If the lights come on, then he's good. Last year in the minors, he was bored. Probably. He doesn't get amped up for it. It's rare when you see elite big leaguers or good big leaguers dominate the minor leagues. They just get bored. And then they eventually figure out and say, I guess I've got to do a little bit more to get called up. And then they get called up. It wakes them up." Lindor goes on to say, "He acts like he don't care," Lindor said. "And when you act like you don't care, yeah, you're bored. He's not putting everything he's got into it. It doesn't feel like he's being..."
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts. You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Challenged. I appreciate the captain of the New York Mets, Francisco Lindor, being honest. This does not make Luis Angel Acuña look good. I'm sorry. And I don't know if Lindor meant it as a burial. I don't think he did. I think he was just being honest. He was probably answering the question about Luis Angel Acuña and his struggles in spring training, even though he looked great defensively at third base on Sunday. I'll give him that. But you bored? You don't realize you got to put more into it? That's a terrible look. And this is a part of why, even though it feels like Luis Angel Acuña is going to make this team because of the fact that Donovan Walton was sent down and De Los Santos was sent down, so there's no other option on this team. As we sit here right now, and we are recording this on a Sunday night, I don't think he's making the team. I think they're going to go out and acquire a right-handed bat who could play the infield and be that super utility player. Number one, like I've said before about Acuña, I don't think they want him riding the pine. I think they want him playing. And while Mendy can get creative to try to get him some playing time and some at-bats, the most of the time second baseman for the Mets is going to be Brett Beatty. It's not going to be Acuña. Now, I did make a mistake on the last Rico about the amount of lefties that the Marlins and the Blue Jays have. They could face a second lefty because the Marlins do have a lefty in their rotation. But for the most part, they're going to see a lot of right-handers, which means Brett Beatty is going to play every day. But that comment by the captain, that's not just some random observation of a beat reporter, no offense, or my observation. That's the observation of Francisco Lindor. So, Hoff, I ask you, as a guy who's been pushing the Acuña agenda, does that comment by Francisco Lindor worry you a little bit?
No, because I think that because here's the thing. I think Vientos had the same issue too, which is why I think that they didn't want to call him up right away. I feel
but
like
he hit in the minors.
He did, but there was an attitude issue over there too. There was something was going on that clearly Mark Vientos was not greenlit earlier because of some sort of attitude issue, whether he was lollygagging, whatever the case is. There was something going on that they chose not to bring him up. And I think it's a case. Listen, I'm not saying it's a great sign, but I think this is an average thing with a lot of young players. I think that this happens. After a while, after you've hit a peak, why am I not up there? And they have like a little, not depression, but they have a little bit of like a regulation issue.
Maybe I'm really crazy for saying this. I understand the minor league thing because we've heard it before. Like, this is not a brand new concept of big-time prospects being bored, quote-unquote, of AAA. I'm more alarmed by the spring training thing. And I know it's spring training and it's Port St. Lucie, Florida, and then you're taking a bus to West Palm Beach. Why should you be fired up? You should be fired up because you're trying to compete for a job. I mean, here's the reality. Brett Beatty's got the best OPS in spring training. That could turn out to mean nothing once this season starts if he doesn't produce. But a big part of why Brett Beatty is going to get this opportunity at the start of the year is because he went into AAA and he performed. I'm sorry, spring training and performed. If Luis Angel Acuna hit 340 in the Grapefruit League, right, and walked a bunch of times and stole a bunch of bases and was electric, don't you think the final decision may have been different, where the Mets may have said, wow, you know what? I tell you, he performed. He really earned it. We have to have him up here and even face some righties. So he blew it, in my opinion. I'm sorry. That is a blown opportunity. So if you're not pumped up and you're bored by something that could have changed your career, it really could have. He could have been the opening day second baseman in an alternate universe. And instead, he didn't have a great spring training. The captain's saying he's bored. And I'm telling you right now, I don't care what the roster says, I think they're adding somebody. I don't think he's going to make the team.
Or how about this? Maybe he's just so confident that when he does get the call again, he's like, I've done it before. I can make the majors. And I might not get it right now. Whatever. It is what it is. And if I'm not with this team, if I get traded, so be it. I got to be honest with you. And I'm not saying I'm happy about it. He has a bit of a I don't want to say ego, cockiness, but he's got something to him. He's a little flashy. He's confident, man. He is. And it clearly didn't show in spring training. That's fine. But when he was called up last year, he was effective.
Here's the problem you run into, okay? If I'm right that he starts the year at AAA and he's bored again and he's hitting 240, but Ronnie Mauricio recovers after he gets a little extended spring training and some time at single A, and then Ronnie, who's going to play second base, third base, and shortstop, hits the ever-living piss out of the baseball, guess who's getting the call-up? Not Luis Angel Acuna. So that's the risk you run into. Got to perform.
Trade bait, baby. Let's go.
He's not going to help us trade bait if he's hitting 215 at AAA.
Nah, the name Acuna goes far these days. Trust me. I've heard things about his brother.
Here's what Acuna said in regards to the comments that Lindor made through an interpreter. He said, I think in the major leagues, there's a certain level of adrenaline and energy that just isn't there in the minor leagues. So he basically confirmed it. Now, real quick, I'll give you a couple of names. Right before we signed on the Rico, I read about Brandon Drury being released by the Chicago White Sox. He did not make the White Sox, even though Drury had a really good spring training. Drury would be a perfect fit. He can play second. He can play third. He can DH. He's a right-handed bat. And if he performs, you could very well trade him. Or it could make it even easier to trade Starling Marte. Again, it gives you another right-handed option at DH. So Brandon Drury is available. That's an easy pickup. Garrett Hampson was placed on waivers. I'm not sure if he's been picked up yet, but that's another example of just a guy who can kind of serve that role. Because again, this is not an everyday job that Acuna would be filling or his replacement would be filling. It'd be part-time because Beatty's going to get that first crack to be the everyday second baseman. One last thing before we get into some opening day memories. Kodai Senga is scheduled to make his first start in game two of the three-game series against the Miami Marlins, game number five. So obviously they've given Senga a little bit more time to get ready for the season. They did the same thing with David Peterson. I don't get it as much with Peterson, but certainly with Senga, they've always handled him with care. He basically didn't pitch last year. So he's going to start the fifth game of the season. And according to team officials, his pitch count in his first start back will be 75 pitches. And it will probably be a couple of starts before Kodai Senga gets to the 90-ish, 95 to 100. So this kind of handle Senga with care is going to continue here at the start of the season with a pitch count of 75. And again, that's why there's a value in Paul Blackburn. That's why there's a value in having bullpen arms that can pitch every other day or basically every day, because Kodai Senga could give you four brilliant innings. There's a couple of at-bats where guys are fouling pitches off. His pitch count could be 73 after four innings, and he could be effective. And then all of a sudden, you're going to your bullpen in the fifth inning. So it's frustrating. I like Kodai Senga. It's frustrating, but I'm going to trust that the Mets know what the hell they're doing. I'm going to trust that because Senga didn't pitch at all last year, and you don't want him running out of gas late in the season. And we read that email on the last Rico when we went to the mailbag. If you missed it, episode 448, where a guy even said, hey, maybe we're better off having these starting pitching injuries because it keeps guys fresh for later in the season. Well, let's hope that's the case with Kodai Senga, because he's going to be handled with a lot of care to begin this season. When you head out to Citi Field, which I cannot wait to do in 2 weeks, you can knock one out of the park and raise that apple with Takara Chuhai, a sparkling cocktail that blends real soju spirits with the delicious flavors of fruits locally grown in Japan. It will be available at Citi Field in, of course, Fuji Apple. How can it not be? White peach and lemon. This is not only the official sake of the New York Mets, but the official sake of Rico Pronia. All right, let's think about some opening day memories. I closed my eyes a couple of days ago, and I started thinking about that excitement, that rush of excitement when the baseball season starts. And I want to make it clear, I didn't pick just home openers. I picked opening day, when the games start, when the season starts. Sometimes we're not in the ballpark, like we're not going to be in the ballpark this year unless you're flying to Houston for opening day. And I closed my eyes and I said, all right, what jumps out at me? What jumps out at me? So I pulled a few clips. I sent them over to Pete Hoffman. And hopefully these will make sense, Pete. We'll play the right ones. I apologize. We didn't plan it out meticulously, because I closed my eyes and said, what am I thinking of? And one that jumped out at me more than others was opening day 2005. I'm going to start with a negative one. I apologize. Opening day 2005, the New York Mets, the Cincinnati Reds, Pedro Martinez is making his Met debut. This offseason that we just experienced has some similarities. Tiny. It's really not that similar, but tiny similarities to the offseason of 04 and 05 because of the hype of getting to see certain players. Carlos Beltran was signed. We were ecstatic about that. Of course, Pedro Martinez was signed. Willie Randolph was the brand new manager. And it was really a new era in Met baseball, because 04, 03, it was the Art Howe era. It sucked. It was awful. It was just very, very different as we began the 2005 season, and it began wonderfully. Pedro gave up 3 runs, but he was striking everybody out. He had a ton of strikeouts. Beltran hit a home run. It was magical. It was all beautiful. And then that son of a bitch, Braden Looper, decided to take this gigantic turd all over our beautiful opening day. I remember where I was for this day. I was working at Sirius Satellite Radio at the time, and I had a night show. So I had my scorebook in a bar in New York City. That's right. One of the rare times I've ever done this, where I scored a game in a bar in New York City. And as Braden Looper came in with a lead and he decided to flush it down the toilet in like 35 seconds, I'll never forget that feeling. I had a little liquid lunch going on in that situation of just slamming my book and leaving. So ladies and gentlemen, here's an audio memory of April 4th, 2005. The New York Mets blowing opening day to the Cincinnati Reds.
Hit pretty good. Does he do it again? That's going to be gone. What a start for big number 44. A 2-home run day. The 10th time in his career he's had a multi-homer day. And the Gold Dust Twins are crossing home plate. We've got a brand new ball game, Chris. We're tied at 6.
Yeah, Adam Dunn hit his second home run of the game. This was a game-tying home run against Braden Looper in the ninth inning. And then the very next batter, Joe Randa, hit the game-winning home run. It was so typical of what we would see from Braden Looper, which is Braden Looper had this thing. If I'm going to blow a game, I'm not going to make you sweat it out. I'm not going to make you wait. I'm just going to kick you in the nuts and throw you down and put you out of your misery. He had a few like that. He had one at Yankee Stadium, too. I'm trying to remember the situation where he came in, faced like 3 batters, and that was it. It was just, he never got an out, and he didn't even get an out in this one. So opening day 2005 is one that really jumps out at me. But let me give you a positive one. When I had my eyes closed and I was thinking about opening day, I was thinking back to 1996. I was only 12 years old at the time, but the Mets were taking on the St. Louis Cardinals on opening day. It was a rainy, disgusting day. Not a good day. And the Mets were down 6-0. I mean, everything was going bad on this opening day back in 1996 against the St. Louis Cardinals. Now, the Mets would come back and win. It was a great comeback victory, but no one actually remembers how they came back. Like, I'll ask that to the audience. You guys remember how the Mets erased the 6-0 deficit? Probably not. I even looked at my old scorecard. I looked at it. I was like, yeah, I don't remember that. But we do remember one thing from that opening day, and that was Ray Ordonez in his Mets debut. We'd heard so much about Rayo. He's great defensively. He's our Ozzie Smith. This is his first game as a New York Met, and right out of the gate, he made a defensive play we would never forget, because Ray Lankford, I forget if Ray Lankford was the batter or was the base runner. Ray Lankford was the batter. Royce Clayton was the base runner. And Lankford ripped the ball into the left field corner. And Ordonez, as the cutoff man, caught the throw from Gilkey, was on his knees, and then wheeled around and made a perfect throw to the plate to get Royce Clayton at the plate. And for most Met fans, S. Sal Licata, he'll confirm this too, because he loved Ray Ordonez. This was the play of opening day 1996, Ray Ordonez introducing himself to Met fans.
And Lankford gets one down the left field line. Clayton rounds second. Lankford going into second, and Clayton's going to try to score. Ordonez threw it from his knees, and they got him! There is your first look at what Ray Ordonez is capable of doing. He was on his knees, friend.
I remember that call. And the thing I remember is that last part. He was on his knees, friend. And I'm not saying that in any kind of dirty way. I'm saying it because I just remember the inquisitive, as you heard in the clip, the inquisitive sound of Howie Rose. Like, he was on his knees, friend. How the hell did he do that? I don't know if we've, as a Met community, appreciated enough the defense and brilliance of Ray Ordonez. I think, unfortunately, there are three things about Ordonez's time here that kind of mars appreciating his brilliance. Number one, he was such an awful hitter. Like, it's tough to look past that. He was a walking slump, and he would hit his one home run a year, and when he would hit that home run, you knew he would go through like a 1-for-30 because all of a sudden Ray Ordonez thought he was a power hitter. So number one, I think his offense kind of made you forget and appreciate his defense. Number two, he wasn't a part of the team in 2000 during the postseason run because he got hurt. And when he got hurt, Melvin Mora came in, replaced him. And then in the infinite wisdom of Steve Phillips, he took Melvin Mora and traded him in a package for Mike Bordick. And I know this is probably not fair, but on the Luis Soho game-winning hit in Game 5 of the 2000 World Series, I always imagine Ray Ordonez making that play. Probably not fair, probably not happening, but I think Ordonez not being a part of that run in 2000 also hurts him. And then the third thing is the way it ended. I think he started ripping Met fans at the end, if memory serves correct. But Ray Ordonez's defense was utterly brilliant. Like, I appreciate Lindor's defense. I appreciated Jose Reyes' defense when he was here. But when you really think about it, close your eyes, forget about the offense for a second. Ray Ordonez was on another level. I love Lindor's defense, but Ordonez's defense was on a completely another level. Continued closing my eyes, thinking of opening days, opening days, opening days, opening days. And I got to 2000. And what's funny about 2000 in Japan is if you ask most Met fans about opening up the season in Japan in 2000, they probably think Benny Agbayani's game-winning Grand Slam was opening day, but it wasn't. That was the second day of the year. The first day of the year, Mets played two games against the Cubs in 2000. It was actually the two first ever regular season games in Japan. So for anyone who hated the opening day this year, doesn't like the new tradition of going over to Japan or going overseas, we started it. We were part of the beginning back in 2000 when the Mets played the Chicago Cubs. But opening day was the day before the Benny Agbayani Grand Slam. That was when Mike Hampton was making his New York Mets debut, the much ballyhooed trade that we made during the offseason with the Houston Astros to get Mike Hampton, to get Derek Bell. Sent out Roger Cedeno, sent out Octavio Dotel. And here is Mike Hampton, the new ace, because he was the ace. He was starting opening day. Al Leiter was not starting opening day, despite everything he had accomplished in 99 and 98 as a Met. It was Mike Hampton. And Mike Hampton could not throw a goddamn strike. He was infuriating. Could not throw a strike. And that is it as far as my memory of opening day. It's literally waking up at 4 in the morning, scoring a game that started at 5 in the morning, walking into school a little bit late, though more late the following day when Benny hit the Grand Slam, and being very perturbed by Mike Hampton's debut because he couldn't throw a freaking strike. He just couldn't do it. But that jumps out at me. And I think it's mostly the idea of waking up at 5 a.m. And I brought this up on the fan the other day. You know, what if we were given the opening day nod in Japan? Like, let's say we were doing it against the Dodgers. Would we be fired up? Would it feel like opening day? Would we be bitching about it? Would we be excited about it? Would we look at it as revenge on the Dodgers? Like, what would our sentiment be? Because 25 years ago is a long time. It is. And 25 years ago, I'm a kid, man. I'm just like, great, baseball's here. That was my attitude. I was really just happy that baseball was back. But I wonder if we're given that nod, and we may. It's not crazy. It's not crazy that we're given that Japanese opener in the next couple of years, especially if we do a better job of acquiring Japanese players. Obviously, we still have Kodai Senga, but you never know what the next few years hold. I got to give one more negative. Two more negatives, and I get back to positives. I promise I will end the opening day memories portion of the Rico Bronya with positive memories, but there are a few negatives. Opening day 2003. Closed my eyes thinking about opening days. Opening day 2003 against the Chicago Cubs at Shea Stadium. Two memories. Number one, it was probably the coldest opening day I ever remembered. And I could check my scorebook for that official temperature, but I'm telling you, the temperature started with a 3. Like, it was effing freezing. That's number one. Number two, Tom Glavine got the nod. I, like most Met fans, was not thrilled about the signing of Tom Glavine, but try to make the best of it. He's here. He signed a 4-year contract. What are we going to do? And he goes out and has quite possibly the worst debut a new Met could have. And the funny thing about debuts, I don't know how many people remember this. I barely remember this opening day. That's why I didn't want to use it, because I was very, very young. But I remember vaguely Bobby Bonilla's Met debut back in 1992 after he signed as a free agent. The Mets opened up that year in St. Louis, and they won on opening day in extra innings on a game-winning home run from Bobby Bonilla. You would think, kind of like Gary Carter hitting a game-winning walk-off home run in his first Met game, boy, that would live in history. But that moment did not dictate what Bonilla was going to be as a Met. It was false. It was fake. It's not remembered by most people, honestly. I think, like, when you really think about it, if you're ranking great opening day moments, why wouldn't that be number one or number two on the list? It's not because of Bonilla's legacy here. It's not because that was the worst team money could buy. So what happened next is what dictated us not giving a crap about it, not what happened in the moment. Because in the moment, in 1992, and I promise you, I don't remember my feeling in the moment. I don't remember even watching it. Like, I remember the 92 season. The 92 season is one of the first years I do remember. But the problem is I don't specifically remember the memory of winning on opening day against the Cardinals. It's more something I knew that had happened, if you know what I mean. But that moment was great, but everything that followed it ruined it. Now let's get back to Glavine. So Glavine takes a dump on the mound on opening day 2003 and gets mercifully booed as he walks off the mound. I mean, it was as bad as you will ever see it. And when you think about Tom Glavine's career here, and now we can be a little bit more even-keeled about it, we can be fair about it, he was never what he was with the Atlanta Braves, but I'll tell you this about Glavine, he took the baseball every 5 days. Every 5 days, Tommy Glavine was on the mound. And he got better as his Met career kind of went on. His first year in 03, the year I'm talking about, 4.5 ERA, one of the worst ERAs of his career. Then in 04, he goes to the All-Star game, pitches to a 3.6 ERA. And then in 2005, he pitches to a 3.5 ERA. And then in 2006, another All-Star appearance, pitches to a 3.8 ERA. And he's throwing 200 innings every single year. So Glavine was able to sandwich the horrible beginning and obviously the horrible ending. I don't need to get into the horrible ending again, getting booed off the mound in game 162 in 2007. But he actually sandwiched these two moments with, like, being okay. Like, he was solid. That's the thing about Tom Glavine. He took the baseball every 5 days. He was not the Cy Young guy he was in Atlanta, but he pitched. But boy, that opening day of 2003, the combination of getting absolutely destroyed by the Cubs, the combination of it being 25 degrees outside, and Tommy Glavine's debut. And here's the trivia question you can ask your friends. Who's the Chicago Cub that day that hit two home runs and drove in seven runs? The answer,
is Corey Patterson. We don't think of Corey Patterson the way we think of Tuffy Rhodes hitting the home runs off Doc in 1994, but yeah, Corey Patterson did it to us. So the Cubs have had a few guys torture us on opening day. And the other negative, in fact, don't even play this clip off. I sent it to him. I've changed my mind. I'm just going to mention it quickly and move on. It was opening day 1997, where the Mets played the San Diego Padres and gave up back-to-back-to-back home runs, and the bullpen imploded, and they lost to San Diego. I remember that one. I don't know why I remember that one so well. And also the fact that they opened on the West Coast and played so many games on the road before they finally came home and had opening day rained out. That was the other memory. I'm going to give you a couple of surprising ones. 2020. Now, 2020 is a unique season in baseball history in that no one really wants to remember anything from 2020, right? Like, what does any of us truly remember? The fact that Ahmed Rosario hit a walk-off home run for the Mets against the Yankees at Yankee Stadium only because it was just so odd. It was just very, very weird. Or the Mets and the Marlins canceling the game because of a social protest. Like, there's weird things about the season, but nothing very memorable except for opening day. Opening day 2020 at an empty Citi Field. The New York Mets, the Atlanta Braves. Jacob deGrom dominates. Like, deGrom picks up exactly where he left off from his brilliant 2019, from his brilliant 2018. He's gunning for a third consecutive Cy Young, but in typical Met deGrom fashion, they can't score a run until a returning Yoenis Cespedes, who hadn't played for the Mets in years, stepped up to the plate.
Cespedes 0 for 2 in his return. And he drives one deep left field, headed back toward the wall. That ball is out of here! Yoenis Cespedes, more than 2 years on the sidelines. He's back with a home run, and the Mets lead it 1-0 in the seventh. Yoenis Cespedes, the Mets have waited long and anxiously for his return, and he shows why he can be such a force as he clobbers one into the lower seats in left field, and the Mets lead it 1-0.
So I think there's a few reasons why that opening day memory is going to die a miserable death in the memory bank of Met fans. And maybe I'm going to be the last person to ever bring it up. Number one, there's nobody in the building. You can even hear it in the clip. There's such an awkwardness to the fact that Yoenis Cespedes is hitting this awesome home run and nobody's around, right? So that's number one. It's obvious 2020 is a year in which most people want to forget. The other thing was how bad the season turned out for the Mets. The Mets did not have a good year. We didn't sneak into the expanded playoffs. We didn't have a good year. And then number three is how miserably it ended Cespedes. Yoenis Cespedes' Met tenure was so weird and ended so badly. You know, you think back to 2018 when he barely played. In 2017, he barely played too. But in 2018, he barely plays. We hear about, I'm trying to remember the animal that ran him over. The ox? No. The bull?
The wild boar.
The wild. I have a mental block off against the wild boar. I don't know why, but thank
you. I'll get it, because that night we made sure we got an expert on wild boars that called into Steve Summers. So it was a riveting show.
Well produced, Hoff. Well produced.
Yes, exactly.
So he gets run over by the wild boar. He doesn't play in 2019, and then he comes back in 2020, and he was actually terrible for that brief amount of time he played, and then left, and then he walked out. He just left the team. So that home run, again, that's one of those moments that could live in Met history, like Bonilla's home run in 92. But the actions of what happened next really ruin it. But it was a very memorable day. And maybe a part of it for me was missing baseball as much as we did. You know, coming out of the pandemic, people had choices. A lot of people did not care about sports. They kind of looked at the bigger picture and said, yeah, I'm not worrying about this. My attitude was, we need this distraction. I was so excited for the return of the NBA, so excited for the return of baseball. Now, years later, I look back on it, I think those seasons sucked. And there is a challenge on taking it serious. I mean, you hear it when we talk about players. Whenever we get to 2020, either we don't mention it or we just throw it out and say, yeah, it was 2020. So it's such a lost season. But I do admit in the moment, I was very excited. I was excited for baseball to be back. And then, as I closed my eyes, thinking of opening day memories, there was one that came out on top. There was one that, to me, if I'm ranking my favorite opening day memories, this may be number one. Let's go all the way back to 1998. It was the first time the Mets ever played a regular season game in March, which is now commonplace. And the temperature that day against the Philadelphia Phillies, my memory will always tell me it was 90 degrees. When I look back at the history books, apparently it was 80 degrees. But I like to add the 10 degrees because it felt hot. It felt disgusting. Like, I didn't even love the fact it was this hot. But then we settled in for a classic. Bobby Jones pitched a shutout. Curt Schilling threw a shutout. Ray Ordonez, like he typically does on opening day, made a brilliant defensive bare hand play, I remember. And then, of course, the ending. The ending is very memorable. Bases loaded, two outs, 3-2 count, 0-0 game. Like, you knew it. All right, this is it. We're going to find out. And the Mets' backup catcher. Because at this point, the Mets did not have Mike Piazza. He was not a Met yet. Todd Hundley was hurt. And the Mets were dealing with a cavalcade of not great catchers. Up came Alberto Castillo for, when I close my eyes, the number one opening day memory on a personal level.
About 4 hours and 40 minutes of elapsed playing time. And every pitch has led to this, which will either end it or send us to the 15th, save for a foul. Line drive, base! Put this baby in the box! Mets win! The Mets win on opening day again! How about that?
Yeah, that was cool. That was cool because it was beautiful outside. Think about sitting there for 4 hours and 45 minutes, but it's 37 degrees. Like, that would have been a freaking nightmare. In fact, most people probably would have left. But on this beautiful, gorgeous afternoon, they capped it off with this great victory. Alberto Castillo with a game-winning hit. The truth is, when you think back to a lot of Met opening days, a lot of the games aren't great, which is a part of why, to me, they're not that memorable. You know, when there's a classic game, whether it is 0-0 into the 14th inning, game-winning hit by a backup catcher, or it's, unfortunately, what happened in 2005, where the Mets blow a three-run lead in the ninth inning and Braden Looper takes a dump on the mound, or 2020, you know, say what you want about the season, the game was very memorable. A lot of the games, unfortunately, are just not that memorable. I wonder what we'll think about last year's opening day, because I think our lasting memory is going to be the Rhys Hoskins, Jeff McNeil kerfuffle, or maybe the kerfuffle between me and Spike Eskin. But as bad as that opening day was, as listless as it was, we know it led to something great. And I think that's the key to all this. It's usually, what does it lead to? So as we sit there on opening day on Thursday afternoon against the Houston Astros, and yes, there will be an instant reaction, Rico, as soon as we physically can. After that game is over, it's not just about the game. It's about what happens next. Obviously, Juan Soto had a pretty good opening day in Houston last year. The outfield assist, the big hits, the home run. Like, he was unbelievable in his first game as a Yankee in Houston. We'll see if he can replicate that as a New York Met. I've said this before. We are marching to opening day with a Rico every single day. What kind of Ricos are you going to hear over the next 5 days? I'll tell you a few of them. We will have a tradition like no other. Mets versus Yankees bets. We like to set them up here on the Rico. This is for Yankee fans, for Met fans. You can play at home as well, where we pick five or six or seven Mets versus Yankee bets, discuss it on the pod. And then if you like those bets, you can take it at home. Just make sure you do it responsibly. We will bring on the Mets text chat, the text chat I'm involved in that I talk about quite frequently here on the Rico Bronya. The gentleman on the text chat will join the Rico. And until Pete Hoffman gets a phone in which his text message turned blue, this will be the closest Pete will ever get to the Mets text chat, which is talking to us on the Rico. But as long as he remains green, it's never going to happen, Hoff.
I got to be honest, Ev. I think I'm going to boycott this episode and skip it. So
come on.
No, I don't want. Listen, I've told everybody. You've even offered this as a gift. I'll buy you an iPhone.
I said that. I said, I'll buy him a freaking new phone.
Not doing it. I'm a Samsung guy. Let's go Galaxy.
We will also make MLB predictions. We'll have an episode about that. We'll make specific Mets predictions. We have an episode on that. So we've got a lot of Ricos coming up as we head towards opening day. It's our march towards opening day. You want to email the pod to ricob@gmail.com, ricob@gmail.com. Remember to rate, subscribe, and download Rico Bronya's. We pop them out all the time. Thank you very much for listening to another edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Ugh, your clothes are too tight, yet you can't lose weight, even though you've tried so many diets.
The reason you're having trouble losing weight could be a liver clogged with fat, and that is slowing your metabolism. Introducing Omicid, a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight, and it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Find out more and see the university studies at omised.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.